And it is my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome back Charles Tack to Many Rivers Books and Tea. He has spoken here multiple times before, done a class here, actually a class or two, it seems to me, as I look back over our 11 years. And tonight he's speaking on making wise decisions through accessing inner wisdom. Charles has been a student of the I Ching for many decades at this point, although you wouldn't know it by looking at that youthful face, and that youthful smile. But he has, in fact, been applying himself for a considerable period of time. And tonight, in addition to the I Ching, he has some other practices and methodologies for accessing inner wisdom, which he will be telling us about. I am very happy to welcome back Charles Tack. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah.
Yes, I have studied. I've studied I Ching for many decades, and I haven't gotten any older or wiser as a result of it. So tonight I've given talks on the I Ching for a long time, and the I Ching is a guide, an inner wisdom. You know, it's something to tap into inner wisdom that's out both outside of ourselves and some and inside of ourselves. So I want to talk about the I Ching, but I also want to explore inner aspects of ourselves where we might more directly access our own inner wisdom, and that's Jung's active imagination process, or variations on that. And there's another process that's much more current in the last 20 years or so, called internal family systems, that has its own interesting therapeutic bent on how to access inner wisdom by taking away the parts that keep us from being in our deeper selves. So there are other also many ways to access inner wisdom that we don't have time for tonight, but I would like to actually, if you're interested, get a little sampling of one of those other ways. Are you interested in that? It's not on the agenda, but it'll be quick. So what it requires is it requires you to stand up. And it requires you to follow me. So you need to put your feet about hips length apart and have enough space between you and the person next to you that you can move. Because there's a fire next door. So so follow me in swaying from one side to the other side. One side to the other side. One side. And if we could, let's see if we can get the whole room in sync. We're all moving in the same way, yes. So as you do this, know that this is a metaphor for making a decision between two things. Sometimes we're on one hand, it's one thing. And sometimes we can go in the other direction, and it may be the other thing. So we're trying to decide, is it this or is it that? Is it this or is it that? So now, as you're swaying back and forth, and if you want to, you can put your hands on your belly, or not, and begin to follow not only the rhythm in the room, but your own rhythm between one side and the other side. And if you want, you can close your eyes. And as you're passing from one side to the other side, notice that you pass through a vertical plane that's right in the center between the two, between left and right. There's a center plane, a vertical plane. As you're swaying, let it slow down a little and let yourself focus more on that center line. And let your movements become even more microscopic until you get to a place where you're hovering around that center. And you hover and hover and hover until you're actually at the center and still. So take a nice breath and rest in this spot, at this center place. Yourself have a memory of a time when you made a wise decision, or when you know someone else made a wise decision. Just let that memory come to you. And if nothing comes, that's fine too. Feel that. Feel into that memory as if you're still there. And know that this place in the center is the place from which wise decisions can more readily be accessed. And when you're ready, open your eyes and have a seat again. I believe that our best decisions get made from a centered place. And sometimes we forget, and sometimes in the midst of the between choices, we don't really know what to do, and we get caught in that. So the trick is to find that again. So, anybody have any, how many people came up with a memory? Most everybody. Good. So, just a couple, anyone, just one or two sentences on a wise decision that you made. Anybody?
What I chose for dinner tonight.
And what made that wise?
I just knew it was cost effective, it was nutritional, tasty.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam. That's a. It's actually wise to make good decisions around food.
I brought my own bowl.
Moving into my house.
Moving into your house. Okay. Anyone else? What else?
Leaving a dysfunctional relationship.
Okay. Wise decision. Yes.
Anything else?
Moving to California.
Moving to California. Good. So, thank you. The question is, how do we actually know when we've made a wise decision?
If you feel centered.
You feel centered? Uh-huh. Yeah. And how do we know for sure if it's a wise decision? Yeah.
After a certain length of time, it still feels good.
Yeah, afterwards. Yeah, and it still feels good, yeah. Yeah, see, what I've noticed is that we can't really, truly know if a decision is wise, usually until afterwards. And sometimes, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but I've made a lot of what I thought were wise decisions, and they turned out to be foolish, and foolish decisions that turned out to be wise. And only over time did I get to see that.
Well, that one thing, you know, if you make choices from an honest place, it's always usually the right decision.
Yes.
Regardless of the outcome.
Yes, right. Make choices from an honest place, right, right. So, I'm interested in how we can actually get to that honest place or access that wisdom before we make the decision. And that's partly why I started studying the I Ching and active imagination and internal family systems. So let me talk about a little bit about my own decision making process. I was raised in a very conventional family in a very conventional small town in Pennsylvania. That was very backward. Well, not backward. It just wasn't current and up to date. It was like I was raised in the post-war era. And the decisions that were made were, in our family, were of two ilks. One was that my dad decided all the decisions, and that was most of the time. And the other one was that we would analyze a decision until we would reason it left and right until ad infinitum, and we, you know, rationally tried to figure it out. And for some reason, I thought there must be something else here to this. And I decided to study it. And I went to college, and in my engineering curriculum, there were courses on decision making, and I learned very sophisticated forms of rational decision making that resulted in me becoming even more rational in making choices between things. You know, pros and cons, weighing them, priorities, eliminating things for very, very complicated, and I thought I was very smart in doing that. So after college, I went to, I took a job that required lots of rational decision making. I was a consultant for a company in New York City, and we were at one of the jobs. There were three of us who were hired to help streamline the activities of an accounting firm, of an accounting department, and we did all our rational analysis and we streamlined the work. And and at the end of that, we recommended that people be jobs be cut because their jobs weren't necessary. One of the jobs that was to be eliminated based on our rational analysis was a job for an older man who was actually a former executive in the same company. It was American Express, and he had burned out, and they demoted him to this place where he did barely almost nothing. But, you know, they wanted to keep him on the payroll, but he had burned out. So we submit that report, and my heart goes like, wow, there's something wrong with this picture. So that made me start thinking that there was more to
decision making than the, you know, the heavy duty rational focus. So forward a few years, and I got married, and I was much more in love, and I was making, in my opinion, those decisions that were made from heart. So, you know, this is important to make a decision from heart. And then we moved to California, and something happened. My conventional marriage with my conventional wife started looking really different for me because I was moving more towards spiritual things. And how could I actually make decisions from my heart that actually had this result that we were splitting up? And so I realized that there was something else besides that in making decisions. And that's when I met the I Ching, which in those days the only translation that anybody could understand even a little bit was this one, called the Wilhelm version. Although some of us are more erudite and can figure it out right away, right, Jim?
sure.
So I started studying and asking questions, and I'd read the translations, and I couldn't understand even. Like, if I got one sentence out of it, it was enough for me. How many of you guys know this version? Yeah. Okay. So, actually, the question, so how many people have or have thrown the I Ching before? Okay, how many people don't know anything about it? A couple. And how many people are somewhere in between? Okay. All right. Did I get everybody?
Just because we've thrown it before doesn't mean we know anything.
I know, that's true. Well, the I Ching became a substitute, kind of like I didn't have a grandfather or grandmother. I didn't have a mentor. And I didn't have anybody actually outside of the conventional world that I grew up in to talk to about what the heck was going on in my own inner world that was different from the conventions that I grew up with. So I needed something. And the I Ching was the beginning of that exploration. So let me say a little bit more. The I Ching can be used as a divination tool where we can ask questions and get readings. And I have a client, I give I Ching readings now, and I have a client who comes up very regularly, who's a consultant and wants to know which projects to put his energy into. So we'll actually ask about those projects, and he will make his decisions based on what the reading suggests, which has saved him a lot of time not going after things that he would have previously. And also, actually, I just saw him, and there was one time when he got a reading that was very positive about doing this project. And I said, so what, you know, he worked on it for a long time. I said, how much did you make, by the way? He said he made $400,000 on this project from making the choice to put effort into it and get the proposal and follow it through. So there is a way to use the I Ching for divining appropriate choices. Okay? Another way that I Ching can be used is as an enhancement of our intuition. This same guy actually was up recently, and we did a reading, and he's just about to consider this particular project, and he's talking about it in a whiny voice, and he's saying this would be a lot of work to do, and he said, and by the way, it wouldn't leverage my skills at all to do this work. And I said, so why are you even throwing the I Ching about it? And he says, well, you know, if it tells me to do it, I'm going to do it. So we get the reading, and the reading says it's a waste of time, basically. why, you know, don't put your energy into it. And he says, oh, okay, well then I won't do it. And I said, so can you see that you actually had an intuition about this beforehand? And he's only beginning to get that. But that's the point, is to, we can actually begin to assess and understand, you know, this actually feels right. So we can actually have our intuition be fed by doing readings. The I Ching can be used as just another voice, right? We talk to lots of people and we want a voice, so we ask. One of the ways that I enjoy using the I Ching is to find out where I'm coming from when I ask a question. Is it really, am I really coming from a place where I am clear and focused? It's a consciousness coach. Am I clear and focused? Am I asking from a muddied place? And often the reading will reflect one of those things. My ultimate goal with the I Ching is to actually embody its wisdom, which is why I've been studying it for so long. And I think I probably still have a long way to go. There's a saying about Confucius that when he turned 70, what would he do if he had a whole other lifetime? He said he'd study the I Ching for another whole lifetime. Isn't that the quote? Something like that? Some very, yeah. So, if we have time, we'll do a quick reading a little bit later on the I Ching and see how it works. But I want to move on to the other two processes, okay? Jung's active imagination process is Jung everybody know who Carl Jung? Know the name? Okay. He's when he was, he decided to plunge into the unconscious to see what he could learn, even though all of the wisdom at that point in time was that's a dangerous place. And in that he developed what he called an active imagination as his process. In that exploration, he describes a lot. By the way, his book Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, which they're out of at the bookstore, but they can order it if you want, has a lot of his description of his inner world. Anyway, one of the things that Jung discovered was this character called Philemon. His name is Philemon. And I want to read to you a quote from that book in bigger letters so I can read it. Philemon and the other figures of my fantasies brought home to me the crucial insight that there are things in the psyche which I do not produce, but which produce themselves and have their own life. Philemon represented a force which was not myself. In my fantasies, I held conversations with him, and he said things which I have not consciously thought. For I observed clearly that it was he who spoke, not I. He said, I treated thoughts as if I generated them myself. But in his view, thoughts were like animals in the forest, or people in a room, or birds in the air. And he added, if you should see people in a room, you would not think that you made these people, or that you were responsible for them. Psychologically, Philemon represented superior insight. He was a mysterious figure to me. At times he seemed to me quite real, as if he were a living personality. I went walking up and down the garden with him, and to me he was what the Hindus called a guru. So Jung had an inner guru that was outside himself and gave him access to wisdom that he didn't have. He also went on to say that it was through Philemon that he actually learned about human consciousness. And my guess is much of his writing had to do with what he learned from Philemon. So why couldn't we learn from an inner guide or an inner guru too? And so the active imagination process is a way to access that. There's a book called Inner Work by Robert Johnson, which is, in my opinion, the simplest description of how to learn this process that I have seen in print. You can order that at the bookstore too. They're all out of it. They sold it, the last copies, the other day. So, active imagination is a way to access inner parts of ourselves, and it also is a way to access things that we want to make happen for ourselves. I said to myself, I would like to understand, I would like a dream to help me with, some years ago, I would like a dream to help me with my next few years. That night, I had a dream that there was a whole crew of men coming, taking a ship onto an island. We get off the island and split into three groups. There's a group that wants to leave the island immediately, there's a group that wants to stay on the island, and there's a group that doesn't want to have any conflict whatsoever. So it avoids the whole thing. I was the leader of the group that wanted to leave. And so we're fighting. You know, the two groups are fighting, the third group is staying as far away as possible. We're fighting, and suddenly in the dream, the ship that we came in on starts to move out of the lagoon on its own with nobody on it. My group that wants to leave, jump on the boat to avoid the fighting and get on the boat. And then we actually see people who were trying to avoid the conflict up on the hill and said, does anyone want to join? And a couple of them join. So they get on the boat, and the boat just drifts on its own out into the ocean. And I'm thinking, so how does this boat know what, you know, this boat is going on its own, and it seems to have its own direction. From the, after we've gotten on, below deck. From below deck, this group of pirates come up. And the leader of the pirates says, the ship knows where it wants to go. All we have to do is follow it. That dream gave me access to the pirate leader. I had an inner character who was a pirate who actually supported me in taking more risks in the world beyond the small world of the island that I knew. So you're getting to see how the inner character actually helped me make decisions based on its bias and my interest. Is it making sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me talk about this third process, the internal family systems process. How many of you have voices in your head that tell you what to do? Most of you? Well, that's not bad, huh? How many of you have voices in your head that say, one voice that might say one thing and another voice that might say something completely different? Yes. So how do you make a decision based on those voices? And which of those voices are wise? How do we know that? Yes?
The third voice is wise.
The third voice.
The pirate.
The pirate.
Or, as in Solomon, when they were gonna, the two women wanted the baby, and Solomon said, cut the baby in half. Solomon was the third voice.
Yes. Yes. That's a great answer. The third voice, the voice that's between left and right when you found the center. The challenge we often have, however, is that these voices are so loud that we can't hear that third voice. Because have you ever noticed that third voice is sometimes quieter? It doesn't speak as readily? Yes?
If the third voice was as loud as either of the opposing sides, he would be like them.
Uh-huh. Yes. Also, a very wise statement. Yes. Internal family systems is an approach that looks at those parts of ourselves, those voices in ourselves that sometimes contradict each other. And it gives a framework for working with them. I have, and by the way, that those voices come from our past. In preparing for this talk, I had a voice that wanted for me to show you how intelligent and brilliant I was. And it was adamant about making sure that everything I said to you was perfect in its speaking and eloquent, and that you would leave knowing how brilliant I was. That's one of my voices. I know you've seen beyond that now, haven't you? I have another voice. Oh, by the way, that voice is between 16 and 23 years old. Okay? He's a young man. I have another voice of a part that is about 6 years old, and he just wants to play. He is totally excited by the possibility of having all of you to play with. And if he had his way, we wouldn't be talking about anything. We would just play. So, what voice do I listen to? The erudite, airtight version, or the playful version? Now, you will have biases. Some of you will like some voices better than others, right, Adam? Adam's a playful, oriented person. But in this framework, there's something beyond these parts. The parts are beautiful. I love these parts. But beyond these parts, there's an actual self that has not only access to these parts, but has a deeper core knowing. If we're going to access our inner wisdom, we need to both be able to move forward in the direction that our soul is calling for us, and deal with all those beings behind us. In my fantasy, not my reality, these beings are from my past. I have this part that wants to be smart and actually use that to get attention. I have this part that wants to play and actually didn't get enough play and just wants more play. If I let those parts run me at any point in time, if I'm blended with that part or this part, it's going to influence the decisions I make and the actions I take. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, when we do discern decisions, we have a lot of aspects to consider. And this is where the I Ching actually can sometimes cut through to the important aspects that are important to consider. So, remember I told you about divorcing my wife. The only voices I had in that process were conventional voices that really wanted to do the conventional things. So I had no other access of anything in my mind that was telling me. It was basically stay in the marriage, you know, get a good job, buy a house, you know, do all those mainstream kinds of things. To leave it required something more. So what I'd like to do is to do a quick reading. Did anybody here come with a question that they're discerning, that they're wanting to make a decision about? You know, we don't want a what do I do with the rest of my life kind of question, but something like that would be willing and interested and able to do this reading, obviously, in a public setting. It would be a quick reading, not a long I Ching reading, but a quick one. Oh, it's 10 after 8. So we have to be a really quick reading. So, thank you.
My book.
Hmm?
My book.
Your book. So.
The manuscript I've been working on for 7 years.
Yes.
Is this the year that it comes forth in its full being?
Is this the year that it comes forth? It can't be a yes-no question.
Right.
So it has to be more like, how do I complete this
right.
year, or
how would I best facilitate the coming forth of my manuscript
this year
in 2014?
Oh, right. Very good. How would I best
manifest?
Okay. So would you come up here?
Yes.
Very, very good question. So, I've given you these coins that I want you to shake and hold the question. And I want you to throw it very gently on this piece of paper and let it spread forward from you. And now put them in order of the closest to you to the furthest from you. Mm-hmm. Yep, there we go. Alright, good. Okay. So
I win.
You win. That's true. You do win by being told what the I Ching would suggest about that question. You got the hexagram for retreat, withdrawal, which is 33. Moving to the hexagram for stagnation, so the I Ching,
it's still gestating.
It's still gestating. It would definitely, the I Ching would definitely say it's still gestating.
Okay.
Does that make sense for you?
I have that same exact
book. Yeah.
Yes.
This one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with accepting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would like you to read it. That'd be great.
Though, and this is, this is from this translation, but I have actually written in notes from other translations, and I'm going to read from this book, my crib notes. Though retreat is necessary, inferior elements, doubt, anxiety, and pride, argue on and on. I'm going to read you from another translation. though entangled with circumstances and people that make retreat difficult, it's still right to go. So having said that, what do you get from what I'm saying? How is it touching your question?
This is a long gestation process, and I've been in it for, as I say, 7 years. So it does not disturb me to hear retreat, pull back. I trust the timing, and that will be revealed.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, that's a very gracious appreciation of a difficult reading. I would like to say that a few things about that, and comments are welcome, by the way. And that is, I also had a book that I wanted to write on a topic that I thought was really important and very significant. And I would throw the I Ching asking about that book for years, and actually several times a year. I did not ever get one positive reading about writing that book. Now it's more than 10 years later. I can write a variation on that book that actually has an end. I was trying to write the book when I was in the middle of it. Does that make sense to you? So so let's look at this in terms of internal family systems. Doubt, anxiety, and fear actually may pull us towards wanting to do something, because we're uncomfortable, we want to get it done, we want to just, you know, accomplish something, we don't want to be afraid anymore, or we need to look good, you know, all kinds of reasons. All those reasons are voices that are aside from who we are, aside from our deeper self. Make sense? Nodding? Okay, that's good.
So how often do you think it's appropriate to ask a same question?
As long, as
yeah.
much as your anxiety asks it. I got to the point on that book. By the way, I'll tell you, it was a book about inner adolescence, and I thought this was a great concept, that, you know, there's such a thing as an inner child. Well, there's such a thing as an inner adolescent, and we should be able to learn from that inner adolescent. In my in the great wisdom of at least asking for some guidance, I realized that my adolescent wanted to write the book and create something. And I don't know if you've ever read Catcher in the Rye, but Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger wrote from an adolescent perspective. He became famous for it. It's already sold, 60 million copies? It sells 500,000 copies a year still. It's written in 1945. He has regretted writing that book ever since. Partially, I believe, because he actually was feeding his inner adolescent, not his wisdom. That's my opinion. So where was I going? Yeah. I came to the point where I got so many no's that I stopped. And now it's probably 10 years since I've asked about that, maybe more asked about that. And I've come to realize that there's another perspective from which to come that's not my inner adolescent. It's not Holden Caulfield who's writing the book. It's actually from a wiser part that actually includes these aspects to it. imagine sending a book out in the world that actually feeds the inner adolescent. Stay on Salinger. I want to say this. I guess I do. He did regret. He regretted writing the book. He actually is on record having said that to a reporter 6 months before Mark David Chapman murdered John Lennon and was had a copy of the book. So, you know, there's wisdom to be gleaned from that story and caution.
I was really intrigued by your remark that anxiety, I'm paraphrasing, anxiety, doubt, and fear can lead us into doing something, right? And that was very interesting to me. It's like, and I wondered if you could expand on that in light of Hexagram 5.
Waiting? Yes. Okay.
Hexagram 5 is waiting.
Hexagram 5 is waiting, right. This translation, by the way, is a very good translation for those who are interpersonally or intrapersonally savvy and want to access psychologically the essence of the readings. Okay? Right?
Very much so.
Quite popular. In the book, Carol Anthony talks about those emotions that are negative emotions. Doubt, anxiety, and fear are, that's, I read from that translation in your reading. She suggests that the sage would never suggest you take any risks if you're being stimulated by doubt, anxiety, or fear. Hexagram 5, which is the hexagram that says wait, take it, be cool, relax, you'd often get that reading. You could often get that reading when it's not time to do something. And that hexagram is also about nourishment coming later, where there may be a time when. You'll have a self or a sense of yourself that's big enough to handle whatever it is you're asking about. Am I addressing your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
By the way, yeah.
In my reading, I start reading this book about the Ocean. It also, when you get a reading, doesn't it suggest that you examine the opposite reading?
Does he do that? Does Clary do that?
I think so. Yeah.
Opposite meaning what?
The exact opposite of whatever coins you toss there. I think in this book there's a chart of opposite readings.
Yes, you could. The I Ching is basically painting a picture. And it'll paint a picture that says the carriage, I don't remember the picture for 33, but there's a carriage that's going down the road, a cart going down the road, and the axle has broken. What? You got that one?
You want the story? It takes about 2 minutes.
What?
In 1968, a buddy of mine was playing around with the I Ching, and well, what's this all about? And he said, oh, you take these coins, you throw them. He came up with a hexagram, and I think that was the one. Well, we got in my car and drove down from Santa Maria to Santa Barbara. It was raining, no problem. On the way back through the Gaviota tunnel, coming out the other side, I lost the steering. and it was like I was on ice. What happened to the tie rod end came out, and I got the car off the road, but
the axle broke.
The axle didn't actually break,
but the
steering came apart.
So it's possible that you get a literal translation of something. The metaphor here in this case is that you got to look at the story metaphorically. What is it telling me in the story? I have an axle breaking. An axle is underneath the cart. You don't see it. So it could be that something internal is not working, and you actually don't see it originally, but it's actually going to keep you from moving forward. It's also helpful in any kind of scenario to look at both sides, to look at all of the characters, and you could be any one of those characters. The opposite is also a possibility, and I don't do that myself.
It mentions that in here, and it seemed to me that it would be like, you know, right, if you're doing something important, you should examine both sides or all sides. So the opposite would be like the shadow side, and that's all I know about.
Right. And let me say this about that, and that is, there are often readings where the I Ching will basically say, look at the shadow aspect of what's going on, look at what's underneath, see if you can find out what's underneath this. Those are the times actually when, again, active imagination becomes a process that you use to look at what's hidden in a situation that might help you understand more about what's happening on the surface.
Well, that seemed to me to be the whole wisdom of it, to look at both sides. And then you could use your intuition to look and see which one is really true for
right.
you.
That's actually a good use of intuition, is to read both polarities and feel into that.
Which was the same exercise we started
That's
with.
Right. Where do I stand here? Yeah, Mark.
I'm curious if you have any ideas about accessing that inner intuition and wisdom on the fly. I'm a school teacher, and there's such a fluid dynamic throughout the day. You know, I'm in front of a class, and how do I present this subject in a way that engages the kids, and at the same time, there's two girls over there whispering to each other and possibly could distract the class. You know, how do I hold that dynamic? I'm working with this one boy and teaching him how to reduce fractions. And at the same time, I know there's problems going on in the home. I need to mediate a playground dispute right now. And this child is having a behavior issue. I have to come up with that. I have to access that inner wisdom on the fly.
Right.
And yes, I do have these other methods, but how do I get to it now?
Right. Well, my experience with that is that the I Ching takes too long.
Mm-hmm.
And active imagination is even longer.
Mm-hmm.
And internal family systems also takes a long time. My experience is that body wisdom is the quickest way in. And I actually took that part off this talk because it was too many things to try to cover at once. At the same time, that exercise we just did about going back and forth was a way to actually move into being centered.
Mm-hmm.
From a centered place in Aikido, in martial arts, that center knows what to do. Like, there's fire, you get out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Accessing that center is the quickest way I know. How's that for an answer?
Yeah. It's a start.
I would say, you know, to get out of reaction, which would be to take a moment and just take a breath. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take very long to take a breath, and that might to separate you enough that you're not reacting.
Yes.
And get centered.
That's excellent. Yeah. That's excellent, actually. That's it. Mm-hmm. When we're in reaction, we need something to calm us. Taking a breath is a way to calm the nervous system immediately. Center can come from there. Yes.
Can I ask you, Charles, if when you led us through the sway, did you personally? I don't really want a direct question, do I? Let me just suggest. I sense that you found a way to pull us all together, breathe at the same time, and then to the school teacher, because I am one too, I'll just put it that way, if there were any way to get those two girls and the two on the playground, everybody breathing together. Yeah, no, there's the simplest, easiest, and then they'd learn fractions, no problem. You know. But I wonder if that happened for you as the leader, just a sense that I had, you know, if I were in your place, I would feel really nervous. How am I going to reach every single person here with these two voices you talked about? I feel like, how am I going to get in that experience as the leader? Can you share what happened for you?
She caught me.
Good job.
No,
good job, Charles.
Brilliant. I love to hear.
I want to say one of the reasons I did that exercise initially was to calm me and to calm people in the room.
Yeah.
But I had the intention to create much more harmony in the room. And when we move together, there's harmony that gets created. So you felt it, right?
Well, I am. Okay, maybe.
I mean, some.
I mean,
we may not understand, feel it consciously, but
okay.
there's more of being in sync when you actually move with people.
Okay, good. It wasn't here if I did. I'll put it
right.
Away, so
right.
I can't answer.
And see, that's where wisdom and intuition that comes quickly is usually not from here. It's usually from lower in the body, and it's usually you can explain it afterwards.
Yeah, right.
You can say how it all worked afterwards, but how did you do it? I don't know. And I want to that reminds me of a story. Is this making sense?
I'm with you.
When I started studying Aikido, I've been a student of Aikido, and when I first started studying Aikido, I had no idea what the heck I was doing. I was lost, and it was crazy, and I went to the teacher, and I said, I don't get this. And he said, give it a month, and if you like it, give it 3 months, and if you like it, give it 6 months, and you know, and I finally got hooked. But in the beginning, I was like, why am I doing this? Move your hand here, do this kind of thing, move this thing, and then throw the person like this, what, like that. And my mind is totally and completely confused. So I'm going through this training being confused, almost way more confused after class than before class. One time in class, I'm standing there working with a black belt. And I throw this black belt, and he's on the floor, and I said, what did you do? He said, what do you mean, what did I do? I said, You just fell down. What are you trying to make me feel good? He said, no. You didn't think you did anything? I said, no, I didn't do anything. And you went down on the floor. He said, that's Aikido. I did the same thing. Like, what? He said, that's Aikido, when there's no effort involved in doing something. I had no idea that I was centered at all. I didn't even have an experience of what being centered was. That was my first experience. There were more that happened afterwards where people showed me what being centered was. I mean, I saw from their feedback and I saw from my training that I was actually being centered here, and then I wasn't being centered there. So here's the thing. how do we know where we're coming from when we ask a question? This is where, in my opinion, the I Ching becomes a consciousness coach. The I Ching sometimes will say to me, I'm totally confident. I'm throwing the reading and I completely expect to get, you know, yes, of course, go that way. And I get this thing that says, you're so lost, it's crazy. You've had these experiences too, right? You are so out of it, you should just, you know, go home and, you know.
Retreat.
Retreat. There's also been times where I didn't think I knew what I was doing, and I got a reading that said, you don't even have to throw the I Ching. You know exactly what's going on. And I'm going, yeah, I do? I didn't have any access point for knowing when I was in a self versus in a part, versus reacting to the situation. I mean, I could have actually had my breathing seemed just fine, but I actually didn't know. Through studying the I Ching, I came to having more of an understanding of when I'm in and when I'm not, or where I'm more in and where I'm not. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where do we go from here? Should I throw the I Ching about it?
Dick,
yes.
Do you ever get this feeling that the I Ching tells you what you want to hear? It's like wishful calling?
No.
No?
I think the I Ching is telling me what I think is I want to hear is because my intuition is on.
Yeah. I just wonder because you've had so much more experience.
Here. Yeah, and my experience though is that the I Ching is actually, and Jim will probably disagree with me on this, but there are times when it feels like the I Ching is a curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Just really, really like, you know, when are you gonna, you know. Get off your, you know, get off your, I mean, it's not, in my opinion, in my humble, egoic opinion, it's not nice to be sometimes.
But you understand that that's what you need at the time, right? And does your intuition tell you that even, that's really what you needed here?
Yeah. That's how I have come and more and more to see it. To the point where sometimes now I actually don't need to, like I know I'm in and I know my intuition is this, and sometimes I'll just want to confirm it and I get it confirmed, but sometimes I'm so off kilter that I missed it too. When we're trying something new, let's talk about a little bit more about active imagination. When we're trying something new, imagine an inner guru speaking to you. How many here, has anybody ever had a guru? Have there been times when the guru has said things to you that actually didn't agree with you?
Much of the time.
Much of the time. Yeah. Could it be that the guru, and could it be our inner gurus, know things that we don't know in our conscious awareness? Because it's outside that. Why wouldn't we want to have access to that? So, having said that, I actually don't know where to go next. I'll look at my notes, unless anybody has any questions.
I have a question. Sometimes I throw the I Ching and then I don't know if it's my inner doubter, or I want to just keep questioning it. Have you done it for the same thing that you're working on?
More than once.
Multiple times.
I have, yes. Have you too?
Yeah.
And what's your experience?
Yeah, usually it all similar.
Yeah, that's my experience too. Mm-hmm. It's almost all, I've never gotten where I had the same question and asked it where it was a really positive reading and then got a really negative one. Almost always the readings are variations on the same thing. It's pretty consistent for me.
No, my doubter is not trusting.
Not
it's
trusting.
He's asking where's the doubter come in. It's like not trusting the first reading. It's like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes you'll get hexagram number 4, which is youthful folly or inexperience. And it basically is saying you've asked the question once before, if I'm not going to answer it a second time, and that's when you get number 4. Another one of those really nice things to hear. So, let me say that I have just a couple more minutes, right?
Yeah.
There's a quote from Oliver Wendell Holmes that I like that says, he said, or wrote, "I wouldn't give a fig for simplicity this side of complexity, but I'd give everything I had for simplicity on the other side of complexity." Let me say that one more time. I wouldn't give a fig for simplicity this side of complexity, but I'd give everything I had for the simplicity on the other side of complexity. What does that mean?
The grass is always greener on the other
side. No. Anybody else want to take a shot at that one? That's good though.
Well, my philosophy about humanity is that we've come from living a tribal consciousness where we're kind of asleep, and we're kind of coming into now self-consciousness and I want this and I want that. And what we're learning to know is what we really want is the tribal feeling. We want community. So we're coming back to that simplicity. We want the simplicity, but we're coming from a sense of who we are instead of being asleep.
That's a real quick way to say that philosophy. No, it's interesting. I mean, I realize in hearing you and yours too, I'm sorry, I hope you didn't take it that we can interpret all kinds of these things, these quotes in all kinds of ways. And I want to tell you my answer, which is, of course, the right answer. So take good notes.
Which is 16 to 23 year
old. Yes, as my brilliant intellectual side is showing itself. You notice that? Yes, thank you.
I think the 6-year-old's in charge. My 6-year-old agrees on it.
Let's have our 6-year-old go and play. When we make the decision making process at the outset, I think is hard. It's difficult when you have often 2 choices or more choices, and we get all flustered about what do we do about staying in this relationship or not, and all these parts come in and get involved in it, and it's complex in our own minds, and then we have conversations with other people, it can be even more complex, right? That's part of the sifting out process. That's part of the complexity at the beginning of the decision-making process. There can come a time when the simplicity, when the answer becomes so clear that it's just simple. And that's what I mean by the simplicity on the other side of complexity. That's what I see as Oliver Wendell Holmes' point, is that have you ever come to a place where it was all confusing, and even these decisions that you made that were wise ones, wasn't it at the beginning a difficult one? And then you finally got to a place where it was actually clear, and you got to, what was the word you used? You know, you're confident and
honest.
Honest. Yeah, honest. It's simple. I'm going here. And
so what's simplicity before complexity then?
that's when it's a trite answer. Well, of course, everyone would know that you do this. That's what I'd say. Or a self-help book that says, in every single circumstance, you do this. Or you never do this. That's what I would say is simplicity in that sense.
So what's the fig? Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't talk for that.
So,
I would add in there, you know, trust yourself.
Say, yeah.
You know,
right.
It's
so,
you can make a decision in disguise.
So, Patrick says he would add in there is trust yourself. And I believe that that's true. And there's a caveat there, and that is the caveat of what self, what part of you is actually what you're trusting? Are you trusting the old patterns from the past that you know how to make the decision and you're familiar with them? And sometimes that's the right answer, you know, that's like appropriate. But sometimes it's not. How do we access self is, for me, has been an exploration for a long time. So having said that, we just dabbled in this conversation, and I, I'm interested in having more conversation if anybody wants to have more. We're done, you know, we're going to be finishing this talk in a minute or two, but I just want to say that if you're interested in exploring some of these concepts more with me, I'm going to be doing a quick, what I call it, an evening workshop series, four Thursdays, every other Thursday starting the 30th. And if you're interested in that, you know, I have this little thing, take one and let me know. Or if you want to put your name and phone number and email address, and I'll let you know about it in more detail, too. I also give I Ching readings, and if you want to know about that, put your name on your email list, okay? Because I'm giving discounted readings for the next rest of the month. Last questions before Jim closes us out? All right, Jim.
Thank you, Charles.